I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. The longtime columnist and author, Jim Taylor, is back. He's always great to have on. A year ago when he was on for his memoir, Hello, Sweetheart, Give Me Rewrite, My Life in the Wonderful World of Sports, he mentioned that he was fulfilling a lifelong ambition in writing a book with Dale Richards. Well, that book has just been published. We've talked to Dale, but I couldn't pass up the opportunity to talk to Jim Taylor. He's written a number of books already, biographies with Rick Hansen, Matt Dunnigan, Wayne Gretzky, and more. This time, it's One More Time, the Dale Richards story, and it's a great book. It's a wonderful view onto Vancouver as it once was, and all the evidence you'd need on why Dale is such a legend and such a beloved figure in this town. The book is published by Harbor, and its co-author joins me now. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Jim Taylor. Good morning, Mr. Taylor.
Good morning. Nice to be back.
Thanks for joining us. You know, I still think of the other books that you've written, you know, the Jim Coleman book of columns. I still think of your memoir from last year. I mean, I remember reading, when I read the chapter on your daughter, Teresa, just such a beautifully written chapter. I mean, I still get choked up about it, thinking about it.
Yeah, it was very difficult to write. The decision to write it was, I guess, the most difficult, and then I bawled a little bit, you know, but it had to be in there, or it wouldn't have been a fair memoir. So that's the way it went.
Yeah, it's just so wonderfully written, and a lot of your sports stuff too. Because I'm not a sports fan, as you might know. I'm just a big fan of yours because you're a great writer. Has anyone ever told you you're a good writer?
Oh yeah, I've had people who. Well, Bill Good, for instance, is always, I've known him since we covered the Olympics together in 72, and he calls me the accidental sports writer, and because he says I should have been writing something else. I should have been writing politics or something, and the answer to that was quite simple, being that I'm not interested in politics very much, but A, being that the road trips are much better for sports columnists. I mean, Bill used to go down and cover city council, and I'd go to Moscow and cover the Team Canada.
Yeah, are you covering the Olympics this year? Next year?
No, I'm sorry, but I'm an anti-Olympic person.
Well, why?
Well, I love the athletes. Always have, but the Olympics to me have become superfluous. There are world championships in all the major sports anyway. We just don't need them. If you ask the athletes, okay, I know you love the Olympics, but if you ask Bolt whether he'd rather go to the Worlds and win $1 million or go to the Olympics, he'll say the Worlds. For the cost and everything else, I think it's hilarious that these Olympics that are not going to lose money. I keep thinking of Jean Drapeau in '76, they could no more lose money than a man could have a baby. And the Olympic people in Montreal, by the way, made the last payment on the debt last April.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, so I love the athletes, love the competition. I just think it's unnecessary.
Are there athletes that we should be watching for these next 100 or so days?
Oh, gee, I don't know. Cindy Klassen, if she's healthy. Yeah. But there's one thing, without naming specific athletes, but there's one thing that I think people should remember. You know, this whole Canadian own the podium thing and Canadians dream of this. Athletes in every country dream just as hard, work just as hard, and there's only three steps on that podium. And I've seen Olympics where Canada didn't win a lot of medals and they were deemed a failure. How can you call our athletes failures because they're not on one of those three steps?
Yeah. I also remember you from your broadcasting days with Frosty Force. I used to love those reports that you used to do. Yeah, after he retired, did you continue on with that? Or?
No. No. No, it was a mutual thing in that I didn't want to do it without Frosty, and the station didn't want me to do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had a really good run. I loved every minute of it.
Yeah. Now, this book, according to Dale, was your idea?
Yes. Well, as you can tell, you know, from all my other books, I love to get older people to sit down and tell me stories. And the way I looked at it, who I knew socially, and his wife Muriel, who had been the PR lady for the Rick Hansen tour when I wrote Rick's book. Dale is the last of his kind, and he's the last of the people around who can tell the stories. And I just kept saying to him, I would say, Dale, you got to write a book. He said, yeah, fine, sure. You know, no, thank you, not interested. And I kept nagging him, and finally I said, Dale, you know, you're going to die. And I said, when you go, all the stories go with you, and I cannot let that happen, so I'm just going to keep nagging you till you do. And then finally he did. And being Dal, of course, once he did, he threw himself into it wholeheartedly. And I'm just delighted with this book.
It's a great book, isn't it? I mean, I the stories in it and the photographs, of course, but just the stories as well. I mean, it's just a great view, as I said, onto Vancouver as it once was.
Exactly. And, you know, there's a line in there that I just love. Dal, in the foreword, he's talking about being afraid, but being a little apprehensive as he goes out to do the show to celebrate his 90th birthday when he sold out to Urfume. And he says, yeah, I know. You know, Tony Bennett does 45 songs and doesn't have a cheat sheet, but he's only 86.
Yeah. And for his, I mean, I was talking to him yesterday, and he's 91 now, but I mean, you couldn't tell he was 91.
Oh, no. It's an amazing thing. I mean, I've talked to the people in his band, you know, and they just shake their heads, you know, because there's only one 17-day band gig, two shows a day in Canada, and it's at the PNE, and Dal has done it for like 60 years, and you know, two shows a day, age 91, 17 straight days.
Yeah. Actually, he said yesterday was next year will be the 70th year.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah. Do you have an iPod?
No.
He says that you have this amazing record collection. How many records do you have?
Oh, I don't know. Probably about 600 LPs. A lot of 78s. You know. That's what Dal and Muir came over for dinner one day, and Dal didn't know about somebody. He went down the basement. We couldn't get him up to have dinner.
Yeah.
Muriel finally had to lean down and say, "Dal, get up here. We're guests."
Yeah.
You know.
So you listen to them still, right?
The LPs? Oh, all the time.
Yeah,
all the time.
Do you have CDs?
Yes, I have a lot of CDs, and I have one of those little machines where you play the 78 or the LP or the 45, and you can record it on a CD, and I do a lot of that because I love to play the music in my car.
Yeah, well, that must be great. Yeah, I've seen those machines. Yeah.
Oh yeah, they're a lot of fun, and I love the music. You know, I always told my kids, you know, when they were growing up, I will never knock your music, never, as long as you listen to all the kinds of music there are, and then make your choice.
So this kind of music that Dal does, you've always liked that kind of music.
I grew up with it. Yeah. Yes. Always have, and that was one of the joys of doing the interviews with Dal. We'd be sitting in his living room, and he'd mention somebody's name, and I'd say, "Oh, I've got that," and we'd start talking about, and it always about the music, and it always triggered other stories, you know.
Are you surprised by the revival of this music? I mean, Vera Lynn has the number one record in England.
Yeah. And Susan Boyle is bringing stuff back. No, I'm not surprised, because the music never goes away. I mean, it may go underground for a while, but the arrangements are so good. I mean, Glenn Miller, any good band can play Glenn Miller and sound just like the Glenn Miller band because it's the arrangements. And that's what I really love. For instance, Dal Richards has an LP out, or a CD out now, shows you how old I am. a CD out now called, as the book is, One More Time. And it's his band and playing the old stuff. And I think it's the best thing he's ever done, because he surrounds himself with just great talent. He's got young vocalists, a 23-year-old named Bria Skonberg, who is just going to be a superstar. And she plays trumpet and also sings, and she grew up with the music and loved it. I was in Calgary about 5 years ago where I had to speak at a football dinner, and at the reception, the fundraiser at the beginning, I heard these voices, and I looked up, and there were about 10 teenage kids, junior high school kids, and they were singing Manhattan Transfer stuff, and they were doing it so well that I phoned the school the next day and said, "What is that?" And the teacher said, "Damned if I know." She said, "They just came to me and said, this is what we want to sing."
Wow.
So it's out there.
Yeah. Who are some of your favorite singers?
Mel Torme, Anita O'Day.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, L.A. is a given. I suppose Sinatra is a given, although if I had to flip a coin, I would take Mel, just as a personal preference. And some people people that I love to bring into the mix when I do Dal Show, a woman named Rita Rise, who was the Europe's top jazz singer for so long that they made her a national, declared her a national treasure. You know, there's so much talent out there.
There's someone that I recently found on YouTube, and I'm trying to find CDs, and it's hard to find. Sylvia Sims, are you familiar
with
her?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, was she a pretty good singer? I mean, I seem to like her.
Yeah, I think she was. I don't think she ever got the recognition, you know, that... And that's one thing about having the old LPs and the 78, you know. When Anita O'Day died, I just sort of gulped, and then I dove into my 78s, and I spent the whole day playing Anita, you know?
Yeah. Have you seen that documentary on Anita O'Day?
I've got it on my desk. It's gorgeous.
Isn't it? I saw it at the film festival a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just this. It's such a good film, yeah.
Yeah.
Were people surprised that a sports writer such as yourself would write a book about Canada's King of Swing?
That's the question that Dal always gets, is why him? Well, you know, my answer to it when I'm asked is always that, A, I know the music a little bit, and B, writing is writing, and people are people. And I've always said I'm a storyteller.
Yeah. It seems, after reading the book, that Vancouver just seems like a more happening place than it is today, was it?
Oh, absolutely. Outside of San Francisco, and many people of the time would say, even over San Francisco, it was the West Coast Entertainment Center. Absolutely. And even in through the 50s and stuff, people like Mitzi Gaynor would bring their act to showcase it here and get it ready and knock the bumps off before they take it to Vegas or take it on tour. I mean, the people who came here, Sammy Davis Jr. was here and couldn't get a room. So, you know, because he was black, slept on the couch in the penthouse hotel while he was playing downtown at the Cave.
Yeah.
Just amazing stuff.
Where did you hang out back in the day?
Well, I was in Victoria, and so I hung out at a little place called The Scene, little nightclub place. In fact, I was talking to Elder Collins the other day, and I said, do you remember a place called The Scene? She said, oh, yeah, I sang there once, and I said, yeah, you did. I said, I took this 19-year-old Plymouth Brethren girl out to her first nightclub to hear you sing. And it must have really worked, because we've been married 49 years.
and The Scene in Victoria, would singers from, like, Hollywood, say, or...
Oh, no, this was very small.
Yeah.
This was just a little pizza joint with music.
And so I guess the big stars of the day, they'd come to Vancouver, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I came over from time to time to hear, not so much jazz in those days, I came over to hear the Kingston Trio and see the Limelighters and Belafonte and people like that. I was going through kind of a folk thing. But those were my road trips. And then, of course, working with the papers, once I got over here, I got into a lot of big cities and places where I go to New York and see, you know, big-name acts.
And when big stars would come to town, would they play with Dal? Is that the case, that they would...
Some of them, yes. Yeah. Some of them, you know, when Bing Crosby brought his whole radio show to Vancouver, Dal was the backup band. He was the backup band for Liberace in a week-long gig here. Dal was big, you know, and then all of a sudden it just sort of died, and he got into hotel management and thought the music was gone, and then later on, after a few years, came back in.
You said Liberace was here for a week-long gig? I mean, that doesn't happen anymore, does it?
No, it doesn't, no.
Yeah.
Lena Horne was here for, I think it was a week at the Cave. The guy gambled and paid her, I forget, just an enormous figure for the time, and the lineups were around the block.
I guess, because that just astonishes me that someone would come and play here for a week. I mean, nowadays it's like one night and then they're gone.
Yeah, and the big acts only play the stadiums, you
yeah.
know. Like, I love Bill Cosby. I would not go to GM Place to hear Bill Cosby. And I want intimacy. I like smoky little jazz rooms.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you and Dal, that you wrote this that together. You just sat around and he told you stories, or how did this work?
Well, yeah, basically, and it's the way I've done all of them. I've done counting my own, I've done 8 of these memoir things, and they basically I just sit, and I've always said I don't do interviews, I do conversations.
Yeah.
And that's what it started. And then Dal, being Dal, I gave him a little digital tape recorder, and Muriel warned me it only had one button or he'd screw it up. And I said, well, he plays the clarinet. And she said, trust me on this, one button. So I gave him this little digital recorder, and my plan was that he would just use it to remind himself to tell me something that just came to mind. He spun it around, and he started doing interviews with all his friends. And it was a gold mine, because they would start talking, and conversation would trigger memories, and I would get stories out of that that I would never have had, because I never would have known to ask.
I mean, after reading the book, it seems like it was fun to do.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It was great fun, because the music was always there. And I did Dal's show, radio show, 2 or 3 times, and when we would talk, I almost sort of started playing Stump the Band. I'd go into the old, the old 78s and dig something out and play it, and then say, okay, who was it, you know?
Yeah. So what's the next project?
I don't know. I tell you what, I have never, this is the first book of the 13 I've done.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first one I ever chased. I went after Dal, as I say, it took me 4 years. I really wanted to do this book. The other books just happened. Wayne Gretzky phoned me one day and said, I'd like to write a book. This is Wayne Gretzky, and I said, sure it is, and hung up. You know,
yeah.
But I mean, they've all come to me through various happenstance. This one I chased. If something else comes up, yeah. But my wife has a great line. She said, you can't retire. I said, why not? She said, well, because if you do, you're going to be in the kitchen leaning over my shoulder saying, what are you doing? So she said, you've got to keep writing. And as I've always told people, there's no heavy lifting.
Yeah.
So I don't know. If something comes along, I don't feel compelled to write, you know?
Yeah.
It's got to be something that, but if someone comes along, you know, and has a story and it interests me, then sure, I'll be there.
Jim, you've done a great service coaxing this book out of Dal, and it's been a delight having you on. I hope this is a great success for the both of you.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for your help. Well, my goodness, this the last four books, you know, that I've been on with you. Maybe you're my lucky charm.
From your mouth to God's ears. Thanks again, Jim.
Okay.
Yeah, the book is called One More Time, The Dal Richards Story. Harbor Publishing is the publisher. Its author, the great Jim Taylor, on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.